Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
USDA says 90 million corn acres for 2008. It said a lot more at the annual Ag Forum in Washington, D.C., too. We'll talk about that and the rally in new crop soybeans today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Aaron Curtis of Midco in Bloomington, Illinois. Our panelists today are Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana, and Brian Stark of the Andersons right here in Champaign County.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's open today's discussion with this question. New crop soybean gained 73 cents this week on ideas that the acreage still needs to be bought. The question is, can it be done? Will farmers really respond to that call? We'll start with you, Brian Stark.
I think they will, Todd. I think with the exception of the three I states, Illinois, Iowa, and Indiana, I think we've seen evidence of more bean plantings intentions in the east from our contacts there. I was just in Nebraska last week working with some Frito-Lay growers out there. Even in a corn-heavy state such as Nebraska is looking at shifting more into beans. So, yes, I think as long as the market continues to appreciate, we'll get more bean acres.
Chuck Shelby, you're in a bean-growing area. Can you put more beans in the ground?
I think the question might become, can we get enough seed? I know farmers are starting to tell us that those that are looking for double crop seed, I think that's going to be a big issue. So right now, seed's part of the problem, I think, Todd. I don't know how far we can go with the supply we have.
Taking a look at the numbers from the soy complex this week in Chicago, the March had a high of $14.22 and a quarter cents, the low at $13.75, and a settlement price up 46 and a quarter cents from the Friday previous at $14.20 in the March. November beans at $13.90 and a half, up 73 cents from last week. November beans haven't closed lower in seven sessions, and USDA this week predicted the 08-09 carryout will be 169 million bushels. That's just 9 million more than expected this year. We're making new contract highs and new high closes. Can it continue? But more importantly, why would it continue?
Well, I think it can, and I think the why is when you look at these numbers, Todd, let's say we only had 70.5 million, that's what we ended up with, or let's say the yield dropped down to 40 bushel, then that carryout gets extremely tight. So I think that's what the market's looking at. We're really sensitive to little changes to the yield or little changes to the acreages.
Your thoughts?
I would echo Chuck's sentiment, too. I think we haven't even focused on weather this growing season, so any glitch in not getting the acres planted, allowing us some cushion there, could set up some big fireworks later on.
And speaking of growing seasons, harvest in Brazil, eventually will that ramp up enough to put pressure on the marketplace at all?
I think from an export perspective, it will, Todd. I think normally about this time of the year, around March, we start to see our export sales slow in beans. Has it been quite evident yet because of some more than consistent rains in Brazil slowing their harvest. But as long as the weather cooperates, eventually those beans will come to market and our sales will slow down in the U.S.
Chuck, given all this bullish enthusiasm, does USDA's $11.50 season's average cash price prediction give you cause for continued concern about the disconnect between Chicago and the heartland?
Yeah, it does. And I was just going to mention that, you know, we don't know how much of this week's rally was caused by the funds. They seem to be in there. You saw gold set some new all-time highs. So I think what we're looking at is a market that's going to give us a premium to start with. If we do happen to grow a good crop and things go pretty well, I think we can see a pretty big setback as we saw last year going into harvest. So that comes back to how the producer handles these rallies and how they get the price and how they get it sold.
I bet you have a plan of action. What is it?
Well, the thing we've seen this year when we go out and do meetings, guys are really, you know, wondering what to do. And we're seeing, again, some elevators hesitate to sell too far out there. So at this point, we're selling a fair chunk of it, maybe a third forward contract. And then we're going to look at put options on the balance. We prefer to probably sell more beans as much as we can forward contract because a lot of guys around our area save their bin space for corn.
The one thing I'll add to Chuck's comment, I think, is exactly right. Get some forward contract sales on the books, but at the same time, when you're putting puts in place, the cheapest put that's on the market today is your crop insurance. You look at it compared to an at-the-money put on the Board of Trade, it's about a third of the cost on CRC. So I think guys really need to focus on maxing up their crop insurance for that put protection.
You know, is Chuck right? If we have a normal growing season or a good growing season, is there a big downturn waiting in the wings somewhere? I mean, USDA put an 1150 out there, and either there's an awful big downturn somewhere waiting for us, or there's a big disconnect between the cash and the futures prices.
I think right now that it could go either way, and I think the disconnect can remain in place just because we haven't been at these levels for a long time, if ever, and a lot of the basis has to do more than just logistics and space, but also incorporating that cost of interest. These facilities are having to maintain hedges in Chicago, so you've got some of that margin risk associated with it, and there may be a disconnect here down the road.
Brian, let's talk a little bit about the export pace. We're about 8% ahead of schedule at the moment, but we're also more than 90% of done for the year. I guess from here to harvest belongs to South America, or is there more to tell about that export story?
Well, I think this week is kind of interesting. Interesting fact came out that China is looking at possibly building a reserve. So that could greatly affect ending stock and demand from the U.S. if they continue to stockpile maybe sooner rather than later. They're projecting through 2010 accumulating this 5 million metric ton of reserve. But if it comes out of the market all of a sudden and we have weather issues, then obviously we could be very explosive here this summer.
And part of the run-up when China comes from the fact that they had a blizzard in their rapeseed area again, and their supply of vegetable oil is going down. So just like wheat, we continue to see problems in the past with the supply side. So part of the thing we have to look at this year is, can we meet that demand and do we grow good crops in the world? That's the most important thing, is to try to build rebuild supplies to a better crop around the world.
Let's talk about world demand just a bit, because world demand for soybean oil is pushing that one to new contract highs this week in Chicago. How does that what does that tell you about demand for bean oil, for soybeans across the planet?
It's just really a strong demand. Again, when we talk at China, we got to look at, they're having the Olympics. There's a lot of talk that they're trying to make themselves look good in the world's eyes. And I think also the other thing, they are raising the standard of living of their countrymen. But the problem with that is, once you get them up to these levels and you get them better off, it's hard to go backwards. It's hard to take away that food. So I think this demand is pretty solid. Again, it just goes back, can we get some good crops to replenish these supplies?
Wheat futures in Chicago this week, a high of $10.60 and a quarter in the March, the low at $10.70 and three quarters. March wheat settled at $10.49 and one half, up 22 cents from last week. July futures at $9.86 and a half, 49 cents the gain from the previous week. Futures pushing higher this week, led again by the Minneapolis Grain Exchange. Some analysts have suggested the bullish old crop enthusiasm has the spec community ignoring the coming wall of new crop wheat. When, if at all, will that supply overwhelm them and cause the market to fall?
As soon as we get to the harvest, but that's an issue. That's a ways off yet, especially for that Minneapolis. It's just going to go in the ground in the spring.
I would agree. I think some impact could come from the acreage intentions report at the end of March, especially spring wheat. Will the Dakotas and parts of Minnesota respond to Minneapolis' spring wheat price? I think they will, at a detriment to corn. And it's part of the reason why, not to switch subjects, but why the USDA's 90 million acreage number kind of got scoffed at this week for most of the week in the corn market.
Well, let's talk just a little bit about corn. March contract high this week at 529, the low at 513 and a quarter. Settlement price up 7.5 cents for the March, $5.22 and a quarter, the settlement. December contract at $5.50 and a quarter, up 12 and a quarter from the previous week. USDA's annual outlook conference showed a corn crop forecast at 12.8 billion bushels. Planted acreage for the coming year is forecast at 90 million acres, as you just suggested, Brian, and yield was pegged at 154.9 bushels the acre. Now, that drops the 08-09 ending stocks to an estimated 1.243 billion bushels as compared to this year at 1.438 billion. The acreage figure is a bit bigger than most of our analysts have been working with, something closer to 88 million for most of them, and I'm a bit vexed by the trade reaction. On one hand, it's bigger than what people had been working on. On the other hand, it would seem that there might be some realization that next year's carryout will still drop. I would have thought that might be more supportive than it was. How did your firm take in those figures?
Well, I think we were just kind of like everyone else, at least through our contacts, that I don't think anybody is nearly that high in their guesses. Just like I mentioned previously, with the West looking at more beans, the Northwest looking at more spring wheat, the East looking at more beans because they don't apply their fall nitrogen and fertilizer like we do in Illinois, Indiana, and Iowa. I think it's more like a mid-80s number. And I was surprised, too, we didn't kind of dismiss it. But I think at this point, they're going to wait for the acreage numbers, and then we could see some fireworks here.
I said 88, but you said mid-80s. I've heard 86. Where do you folks land at risk management on this one?
We're more towards the lower end, down towards 86. Again, the Western guys, I would agree wholeheartedly. I think they're headed towards that spring Minneapolis wheat plantings. And we certainly believe that the guys outside, again, this core, were going to head towards beans, and it just seems like that number is too big. I guess the one thing we would say about that's the biggest number we believe we'll ever see out of the USDA at 90 million in the coming months.
Would you
months.
Agree 90 million is the big number we'll see?
That's the biggest number, and I think we're in for a surprise, like Chuck said. I think most people, like you had mentioned, 88. High 80s is a number that they've been working at, but I think they're going to be surprisingly shocked when March 31st comes out how low this possible corn number could be.
Well, when you look at that, Todd, when you go through these numbers, the declining carryout, you reduce the acres a million, or you reduce them till million and see where the carryout gets to. I think that's the interesting thing that we're going to have to deal with, or the market will have to deal with in the coming month.
So put it in context for me then. What happens if you drop it a million or 2 million?
You're into the 600 to 900 million carry out. They are also reducing exports, and that's a little bit interesting. If the dollar stays cheap and China still has a demand, or the rest of the world, that's going to be something they'll have to deal with too, because exports again in corn are running ahead of the pace too.
The only thing I'll add to Chuck's comment, I think that the fallback is that a lot of people have talked about maybe ethanol usage is a little too high. It may get adjusted as much as 1 to 2 million bushels later on down the road. Whether it happens or not, bottom line is, if we come in a mid to high 80s number, we're going to have awfully perfect weather to maintain a comfortable supply.
Let's explore that topic just a bit. USDA, relying on numbers from the Renewable Fuels Association, predicts corn used for ethanol will be 4.1 billion bushels in the next crop year. That's up 28% and nearly a third of the predicted production. Can it happen?
That's a good question, Todd. I think that there's certainly potential, but you have to believe that with margins return on investment out in 08 and 09 in the negative, a lot of these proposed plants are going to stop and pause, and the ones that are up and running may not be processing at 100% capacity. So that's a good question.
You brought it up, so where do the Andersons stand on their proposed plants at this time?
Well, I think right now that we're sitting with our third plant coming on operation here a few weeks ago, and at this point in time, from all intents and purposes, what I know and limited to know, that's what we're going to continue to do, and we continue to look at other interests, but basically that's about all that we know at this time.
Chuck, same question for you. Can we use 4.1 billion bushels next year and increase ethanol production, or to increase ethanol production? That's still a 28% increase.
I think we're going to look and see. Crude oil is probably a big factor here. Also, the economy. If the economies can hold together here and we don't fall into a deep recession, then that's a big factor, that keeping that energy need going and keeping crude oil higher. And if gasoline stays higher, it certainly helps the ethanol folks make money.
One more question for the two of you. Over the last 2 years, USDA has increased the total number of acres dedicated to production of corn, soybean, and wheat by 14 million. How probable is that?
I have a hard time understanding they jumped up some 6 million from 07 to 08, but next year they actually dropped back some. So I just don't know where those acres are going to go if we're going to get them this year. So it's a numbers game.
I'd agree. It's a numbers game, and I think they're looking at maybe possibly a decrease in cotton, a possibility of some pasture ground coming into play, but it is a land shortage right now.
In a couple minutes, we'll talk with Aaron Curtis of Midco.
We've got a powerful lineup for our 2008 All-Day Agricultural Outlook meeting. Dan Bossi of Ag Resource will talk about the challenges ahead in agriculture's golden age, while Glenn Ring of Glenn Ring Enterprises will explore 2008, a pivotal year for corn and soybeans. And we'll have sessions on ag weather, estate planning, crop insurance, and futures and basis for both corn and beans. Full details are on our website at WILLAG.org. The 2008 All-Day Ag Outlook meeting is made possible with support from Cargill, the Archer Daniels Midland Company, and the Andersons.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Winter weather continued its tenacious hold on Illinois this week. Although we escaped the worst of last weekend's storm in terms of snow, we did not escape the cold. A series of reinforcing surges of Arctic air pushed through Illinois this week, keeping temperatures well below normal. Each front was also accompanied by brisk winds, which dropped wind chill temperatures to uncomfortable levels. Temperatures this week range from 5 degrees below normal in the southern tip of Illinois to a whopping 15 to 20 degrees below normal in northwestern Illinois. A blanket of snow helped keep temperatures down in the north. Low temperatures overnight Wednesday and Thursday dropped to between 0 and 10 below north, but that was a lot better than a little further north in Wisconsin, where 20 degree below zero readings were common. Precipitation was well above normal statewide this week, largely as a result of last weekend's storm. The southern half of Illinois took another winter weather hit on the chin on Thursday and Friday as a storm system moved through the lower Midwest. It appears there won't be an end to the active and cold weather pattern next week. Yet another storm will head toward Illinois on Monday. There may be a brief warm-up before this arrives on late Monday and Tuesday, keeping the initial surge of precipitation as rain. Cold air will plunge in behind the storm, however, changing rain to snow and returning temperatures to below normal for the rest of the week. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
We've got a powerful lineup for our 2008 All-Day Agricultural Outlook meeting. Dan Bossi of Ag Resource will talk about the challenges ahead in agriculture's golden age, while Glenn Ring of Glenn Ring Enterprises will explore 2008, a pivotal year for corn and soybeans. And we'll have sessions on ag weather, estate planning, crop insurance, and futures and basis for both corn and beans. Full details are on our website at WILLAG.org. The 2008 All-Day Ag Outlook meeting is made possible with support from Cargill, the Archer Daniels Midland Company, and the Andersons.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from WILL, public radio for the farming world from the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason. Our guest this afternoon should have been Aaron Curtis of Midco in Bloomington, Illinois. A technical difficulty is keeping that from happening. So we'll continue our conversation with our panelists in studio, Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana, and Brian Stark of the Andersons in Champaign County. While we were trying to figure out what the technical difficulties were, the two of you were having a little discussion, I heard, about the wheat market. Chuck, what was it you were discussing and how Chicago might not be quite at the right levels that it should be. Is that correct?
Really not out of Chicago wheat, and it's carried basically by the Minneapolis and Kansas City. And what that's done, Brian and I were talking about, it's stimulating maybe too many wheat acres here when we need that to be corn and beans.
And just to follow up with our conversation, I agree. I think at some point, Chicago wheat has to come back down. There's a historic relationship between Chicago wheat and corn, about $1 to $1.50 spread between the two. And either wheat's going to have to come down or corn could possibly explode upward. And I think the former is probably more likely at this point. When that happens, I guess, is a universal question, because as long as Minneapolis and Kansas City stay supported, Chicago, everybody wants to play. The funds want to play in the big market. So it's going to continue to have a disconnect.
Well, this becomes a problem, it seems to me, because the Minneapolis Grain Exchange new crop is not the same month as either Kansas City or Chicago. And if you're pushing the market higher based off Minneapolis Grain Exchange, which new crop is September as opposed to July for the other two, then somewhere along the lines, the market's going to get really turned around, or maybe it already is, I guess. And I don't know how that might work out. Do you have any experience that you can draw upon?
I really don't. I think this is a unique experience in wheat. I don't think anybody's ever seen anything like it. And trying to disconnect the classes, I mean, it's a protein issue. And obviously soft red can't be substituted. So we've got all this extra soft red wheat being supported in the central part of the Corn Belt, where we really need the hard protein wheat created. And I really don't know how we separate ourselves from that, because, yet again, all the money flows in Chicago.
Well, if we have a good crop, Todd, I mean, I would think the bases would take a huge hit here as we get into wheat harvest in this part of the country.
Well, what's the discussion like? Because it seems to me Chicago, at the soft red, gets played as the world market often and has. And so this market has for some time been thrown out of whack, I guess, as different classes of wheat come in short supply, because the Chicago Board of Trade is seen as the world market. But they have not responded by creating a world class of wheat to be traded in some form, like a world price wheat. Are there discussions about this? Do you think it's a good idea? How do you fix that problem? I mean, just simply because traders tend to get into Chicago, it is the most liquid of the markets, to protect themselves, despite the fact that it's soft red winter wheat, which is a very small class in the grand scheme of things.
I think it's, a misunderstanding by those that invest in our markets, the funds. They don't understand. And, you know, truthfully, I didn't really understand much of the difference between Minneapolis and Kansas City till we started exploring this issue and talking to farmers out that way. So it's really come down to, it didn't used to matter. It only matters when we run out of a certain type. And if you're a bakery or a producer selling a product, you can't substitute. I think it's a flavor issue. So they're really in a bind if you're a bakery that needs that certain type of wheat.
What other issues does it create along the way? Is there another issue that this creates as it develops more?
Well, I think one issue we've got here when we look at soybeans, because we're going to be a lot of double crops. I've been doing meetings all the way up in northern Indiana, guys that have probably a 1 in a 100 chance of making a double crop bean work without getting frosted, have intentions of planting those beans. And in these USDA numbers at 71 million, there's a certain amount of double crop built into that. So that's where the soft red wheat, again, is kind of skewing this acres and certainly going to have an impact right into the bean world, just because of the acres it draws away or try to double crop.
Sure, and following up with that, what type of yields? I mean, the yields that you normally get out of soft red wheat, or I'm sorry, excuse me, double crop beans, obviously aren't close to a normal crop. So how much of a benefit is that really going to be? The acreage numbers really could be skewed by soft red wheat from a production standpoint, because you're not going to have trend line yield on all those acres from a truthful standpoint.
You know, I want to take up one other discussion that came out of the USDA numbers and go back to the 4.1 billion bushels will be used for ethanol production, and translate that into the food versus fuel debate just a bit. I want to know what you think about that. This is a topic issue, because we know, for instance, in 98 and in 2002, when we had hog producers that went ahead and said, I'm not going to take them to market. I'm going to kill them. I'm not going to raise them. I'm not going to feed them. I'm not going to take any more expense into this hog, and I just simply am not going to take it to the market. But we also know that the price of a pork chop really didn't change during that time. Now, I did hear from USDA's Outlook meeting in Washington, D.C. this week that Smithfield, and I forget, was it Ron Plain, I guess? I'm not sure who, well, from Smithfield. Is that correct? I think it is. Mm-hmm. Said something along the lines, my mother is worried that the price of a pork chop is going to go up. Well, the answer probably Smithfield should know, maybe. But the price, even if a price of a pork chop goes up, what's the likelihood that the price of a pork chop is going to go down again? I'm wondering whether the food versus fuel debate might be a debate that takes place, but even if corn were to go down sharply in price, say to $2, would it make a difference if wheat drops sharply, which is far more likely, I guess, at this point? Will that make the difference in the price of bread? Or is it just such a small portion of what the input cost are that it's not going to make a difference? And once those prices go up, that's the expected price of food.
I would side with the latter, Todd, based on everything I've read. And I'm certainly not an expert in the processors, you know, getting the food price to the consumer. But most people have said, even I think Glauber said this week, which is the head economist, that he only expects food prices to rise 3-4%, even though we've seen a bigger jump in commodity prices. So I think I have to side with the fact that even if corn, beans, or wheat both come down in price significantly, it may not affect or have as much impact on food as people really think it does.
But we had the mayor of New York City was at the UN this week, and he was really saying that ethanol and biodiesel were going to cause people to starve around the world. I think his real rub was they're trying to implement ethanol in his taxi cabs and his buses with biodiesel, but that was his view. And I think that brings up another point that politics, this is election year, a new administration, no matter whether it's Republican or Democrat, may have a totally different view of what's going on, and that's certainly going to impact us down the road.
Well, let's explore that in the last couple of minutes here, because we did see some stories this week, and we've seen them over the last couple of weeks or a couple of months, even a month or so, that U.S. Congress, of course, might consider repealing some of the mandate for ethanol production in the United States. Does that scare you very much?
Yeah, I think it does. I think at these high prices, and certainly the farm bill does not have high enough supports to maintain some of the higher input costs and land costs that producers have, I think that's a real reason here for everybody out there that's a producer to really consider taking advantage of these prices somehow and not be blindsided that they're going to last forever and that this won't go on.
And as an ethanol company, I think it greatly fears us, because you take away the demand or the required blending component, and that really forces nameplate where we can actually have a market for our products. So,
The only product that I seem to know that would fall into the ability to move up and down would be fluid milk. And that price tends to seem to move along as just a commodity. But the rest of them don't. And of course, eggs to some extent. But fluid milk, it seems to me, is the only one that you can think of as a food, is the only one that really can move up and down, and that you can see on the shelf that price at the farm come out at the price of the shelf. Is that the way you see it too?
And part of food going up, Todd, is transportation. Nobody talks about that. It's not just the component of the grain that's in it. It is the transportation. As we all know, transportation is a lot higher.
Well, Chuck Shelby, we appreciate you being with us this afternoon. Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. Brian Stark of the Andersons in Champaign County. The two of you filling in, I know, a little bit there for Aaron Curtis this afternoon. Sorry for the technical difficulties we had on the program. We'll try to get Aaron on later. You've been listening to Commodity Week. It is a production of WILL Radio. That's public radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. If you'd like to hear the program again, you can do that right there on our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Have a good weekend. I'm Todd Gleason.